All right, so we are holding on Kuf Amud Aleph, nine lines from the bottom. We said in the Mishnah, Jeder HaYochid Dalet Amos, that if you sell a Jeder HaYochid, a private person's path in the middle of your field to somebody, it means the minimum of 4 Amos wide. Mm-hmm. Assuming there's no specific meaning I'm going to know. Tana, we learn in a braisa, achayrim, usually means a mayor, says, it's a different amount, less than that. Kedesh yavar chamor b'masoi. It just needs to be wide enough that a donkey can pass by carrying its load. Amar Rav Huna, halacha ka achayrim. So Rav Huna says the halacha in that is like the achayrim. Now, for Tanya, the width of a donkey with carrying its load. We'll see in a second. No, we'll see in the Gemara in a second. That is less than that. But Tanya Hidach, we learn in another place, the Dayone Goyla Oimim, the Dayone Goyla, between Shmuel and Karna, say, which means, therefore, if it's Shmuel and Karna, the Ashbam says you shouldn't say, but Tanya Hidach, it can't be a Brais, if Shmuel and Karna are Amaroi. Okay, anyway, so it's either, he says maybe the correct view is Tanu Dayone Goyla themselves, they didn't author this Brais because they're Amaroi, but they taught the following Brais, which says, Shnei Gamodim Umechze. The width of the path is 2 gamodim and a half. What is gamodim? The Rashbam says 2 possibilities. One is it means shorter amos. Gamod comes from a word meaning short or cut off.
Midget.
And in modern Hebrew, gamodim means midget. That comes, right, no, it doesn't, no. Gamodim. No. But there's a pasuk in Yechezkel that mentions the gamodim and the Isaiah, and many of the Persian there say it means midgets or dwarfs, so that's where they got the modern Hebrew word. Anyway, so one possibility is goymed, gamod, means something short, in which case the Rashbam says normally an amma is defined as from your elbow to your fingertips. A goymed would be to the beginning of your fingers, so it would be a little shorter than an ordinary amma. Because that's the definition of it. Yeah. Or the other possibility that Rashbam says is gamad, it means 4 amos. The word that you have another place in the pasuk, goymed arko, where it describes when Ehud takes a sword and straps it on his leg to go and kill Eglon Melech Moab. It says he had a sword, goymed arko, which the Targum translates over there as goymed as an amma. So good. So shnei gamadim mefta could mean gamadim could just be an unusual word for regular 4 amos. It could just be an unusual word. Yeah, it would be 2.5 amos then. And v'amar Ravuna halacha k'dayone gerla. Ravuna says that halacha is like that. So the question is v'amar Ravuna halacha like the dayone gerla, 2.5 gamadim. Yeah. So the question is v'amar Ravuna halacha k'achirim. Didn't we just say Ravuna said the halacha is like the achirim? And the answer is aydi v'aydi had shiuru. It's the same amount. The amount that it takes for a donkey to be able to go by with its load is equivalent to 2.5 amos, 2.5 short amos, 2.5 regular amos, whatever. So the width of the animal plus the load on its side is that width. And that's the halacha. You don't have to give him full 4 amos. For a derech, all you have to give him is that width.
How can you say that if it's an amma, if it's less than an amma, 3/4 an amma, is it?
No, so one possibility is gamadim means shorter than usual amos.
So how much?
So then it would be, instead of 2.5 amos, it would be 2.25 amos, whatever. Whatever, the point is, that is the amount. The halacha is like the achayrim, and the halacha is like the dayone gerla, because they're both saying the same figure, they're just putting it in different terms. One is putting it in terms of a donkey carrying its load, the other one is putting it in terms of a number of hours. It's the same amount.
It's very skinny donkey.
Okay, fine.
With load.
Yeah, okay.
They don't see the donkeys enough, that's what we conclude.
Okay. Onward. That's what it is. Rishonim do say, similar to what we said at the end of the Gemara yesterday, that it does depend also whether there's a wall there. So the wall there, you need a wider path, because otherwise the donkey is going to bang into it when it turns around. Okay. Then we said Derech Hadavim Sheish Esriyama. We said if you sell a public path in your field to somebody, then it has to be 16 amos wide. So turn it up on him. We learned a braisa, expanding on this a little bit. Derech HaYochid is arba amos, as we just said. That's not the halacha, but that's how this braisa has it. The same as our mission of 4 amos. Derech Meir Le'ir Shmona amos. A road between cities has to be 8 amos wide because you need 2 lanes. The assumption is that a wagon is 4 amos wide. That was Takawai. Our mission said 4 amos. So that Achirim said 2.5 amos or whatever because they figure it doesn't necessarily need to be wide enough for a wagon. It's wide enough for a donkey with a load. But a wagon is 4 amos. You need 2 lanes of traffic, one in each direction, therefore you need 8 amma.
How many feet?
How much is an amma? An amma is between 1.5 according to Rabbi Chaim, 2 feet according to the Chazon Ish. So you're talking 8 ammas would be between, 8 ammas would be, what? So 8 ammas would be anywhere between 12 and 16 feet about. Okay. Yes. Derech HaRabim Sheshes Rishmer, the Derech HaRabim, meaning a Rishus HaRabim, has to be 16 amas wide. That would be an example that Ashram says here. We're talking about, let's say, for example, a city where people go, like an international road, sort of. Like people come through the city from far away. We're not just talking a local. No, more than that. We're talking about like people come like an interstate, let's say, the equivalent of an interstate.
I-95.
Yeah. And Derech Ori Mikvot Shloshim Ushtayim Amos, and the road to an Ir Mikvot has to be even wider. Has to be double that width. Has to be 32 amos wide. Yeah. Amar Rav Huna Maikra, Rav Huna says, where is the pasuk that tells us that fact? Because the pasuk says, Tochen Lecha HaDerech, it says you should prepare you for yourself the road. And the point is, it put us at Derech, and instead it says HaDerech. So HaDerech comes to add another road, the equivalent of the first one. If a Derech is 16 amas, and it says HaDerech, implies that you have to have the equivalent of two interstates, so therefore 32 amas. No, HaDerech means one big road that is the size of two. That's what it is. That's to be 32 amos wide. But the point of it is, this way the guy who killed by mistake, because he's the one who has to run away to the Yomikwa, can get there as fast as possible without anything holding him up. Then we said Derech HaMelech Ein Moshir. We said that
you just
only have the Goyal Adom running after him, but fine, the Goyal Adom is going to be motivated to come after him whether there's a wide road or a narrow road. But like this, he can get there as fast as possible. Okay, Derech HaMelech Ein Lo Shir, we said a king's road has no shir. We talked about yesterday what that means. Does it mean we're talking about just ad hoc that a king has to pass through, or are we talking about that somebody actually says to somebody else, I'm selling you a Derech HaMelech? I mentioned yesterday what the Rambam says on that, by the way, that in that case there's no sale, because it means, at least that's how the Kesef Mishnah, under the Magid Mishnah rather, understands the Rambam, there's no sale because it's not a defined thing. The Meiri actually explains it the other way around. It means he sold him the right that if he needs to pass through, he'll be able to pass through, even if it means trampling on things or whatever, because Ein Moshir, because there's no limit to it. And why is that? Shammel, as you said yesterday, Shammel, part of the Gedur, last of the Gedur, because the king is allowed to breach through a fence or a wall to make for himself a path, but Ein Mamach and Gedur, and nobody is allowed to protest against him.
Does he have to repent?
Yeah, we talked about in Bava Kamma, we had the whole story of David with the lentils or the, no, he didn't want to do it to begin with because Midas Chassidus, but I think the idea is, I think he would have to compensate the people afterwards. It's just, he's allowed to do it at the time.
Yeah,
normally you would say you're not allowed to do it in the first place. The king is allowed to do it, but I'm pretty sure he has to compensate the people afterwards.
But in the end, he didn't do it.
In the end, he didn't do it, right.
Right.
Okay.
Why?
Because he wanted to be machma himself. Not to break through. We had over there where there were plishtim hiding out in a field of barley, and he could have burned the lentils, and he could have burnt it, or he could have taken one field and then destroyed it in order to save another one or whatever, and then he didn't want to use that hatchery. Okay. Then we said Derech HaKever Ein Moshir. We said a road to a kever. There's no limit to it. The reason is Mishum Yakrib the Shachva, because of the honor of the deceased. It's not covered a mess that people should have to, that your people are not going to be able to get through with Leviathan.
Did you
send
the child at the base lesson?
What?
The Dovid
yeah, that was the thing where his soldiers broke through the Plishti lines to go to base lesson. Yeah, it was the whole story there, Baba Kamaya.
I was just because I wasn't with you then.
Yeah, well, that's true. Okay.
The next contact.
All right. Rabbeinu Gershom has a different explanation of it. He says, let's say the body is starting to decay already. You don't want people to have to get too close to the Oren, because then they're going to smell it and it's going to be a bizarre to him. Therefore, you want to have a large area available that people can spread out. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Then we said Hamaimud. We said if you're selling a space for a Maimud, Dayonet Tzipori Omer Basdalat Kavim. The Dayonim of Tzipori said the size, it's the area where you could plant four Kavim, which as we said yesterday is about 1,600 square amas, about the 1,700 square amas, about 40 by 40 amas. Turn it up on. We learn it a Braisa. Hamocha Kivra, if somebody sells his caver. Now we're going to learn in the next Mishnah and the Gemara on it how they used to make burial caves in those days. The common thing was that they would have a cave with niches coming out from the sides of it. You can see the diagrams over here. We'll talk about it soon in detail, where a body would be buried in each niche. So the common thing was you had one cave. Yeah, caves underground. See, the common thing was you'd have a cave like that or a series of caves like that for one family, for one immediate family or extended family or whatever. Like this one person went and sold his caver in that area. Or Derech Kivra, or he sold the road to his caver.
So they were never buried on top of each other.
We'll talk about that in the next Gemara. Wait. Okay, so he sells his kever, derech kivroy, or he sells the road to his kever, mekoyim ma'amodoy, or he sells the place of his maimed, as we're going to talk about soon what a maimed is, or he sells the place where they go to do a hesed for the mess. In all those cases, nevertheless, the members of his family, of the one who sold it, when he dies, they can still go, and they can go bury him there against the will of the one who bought it, because of the bizoyin to the mishpacha. Meaning, in other words, what is it? That Ashbam says that's a gnai for them, that their relative shouldn't have a place to be buried. So therefore, what happens is, so he sold his kever. We say basically the sale was void. The relatives go and bury him in this
because
in this
they don't have another place.
Because they apparently when they don't have another place, yeah. There's a difference, and so they refund the guy the money for the kever that he bought, and then they bury him. There's a different explanation that the pgam mishpacha is that given that you have this arrangement where you have a cave with burial spaces in it for one family, it would be a gnai to have some stranger, somebody from another family, be buried among them. So therefore, same idea. Then they void the sale, they give them back the money, and they bury their relative there. There is an explanation that Rishonim say that this specifically applies to a kever. When it comes to the other thing, the base maimed, base hesped, or whatever, that's a valid sale. Fine. It still has to be because of pagam mishpacha, they'll still need to be able to use it when it's appropriate, when they have a hesped or whatever. But other than that, it can be a valid sale. The guy can go ahead and use it. So the kever one can be rescinded. But not all the other things. We're talking about four different things. One specific caver, the road to the caver, the place of the maimed, or the place of the hesed.
Maimed is
what? We're going to talk in a minute what the maimed is. It's part of the funeral. So the point is, the caver itself, we're saying the sale is voided. The other three things, the sale is still valid. You sold the road to the caver. Fine. All it means is the next time somebody in the family dies, they're going to have to use that road temporarily. They're going to have to right away to go to their caver. But other than that, the guy can use it for whatever purposes you would buy a road for. Okay. So now we're going to talk about what a maimed is. Turn it up on. You do not do less than seven getting up and sitting down. Maimed means getting up for mess. The way you do it is like this. The Rashbam describes it. On their way back from the funeral, they start walking a little bit. Then they sit down in a place. They sit down someplace to be Menachem Avol, to cry more about the person, to say Hespedim or whatever. They sit for a while. They sit over there. It's also a time to think of doing tshuva because Hachayit Malibay, the famous thing. So they go, they sit there for a while. Eventually, one of the people over there, not one of the Avelim, but one of the other people, announces, as we're going to see in the Gemara in a second, we're going to quote a Braisa, that he announces, everybody get up and let's go to the next place. And they go to the next place and they sit down over there and they repeat this seven times. So that is a mind.
And we don't do that.
Well, we don't do that nowadays. Wait, we're going to talk about that in the Gemara.
Oh, okay.
Why seven? Connected Havel Havolam Omar Kehelas Havel Havolam Akol Havel. To correspond to what it says at the beginning of Kehelas, the vanity of vanities, says Kehelas, which is Shlomo HaMelech, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. So each Havel or Hevel is one. Havolim is two, so it's plural. So if you count it up, one, two, one, two, and one equals seven. So therefore, so corresponding to that, this way a person should realize that Ashram says this way, for seven times you get up and seven times you sit down, to realize that after all, a person's life is hell. A person's life, if they're not accomplishing something with it, is not useful. A person has to make sure that they accomplish something useful in their lifetime.
What's useful?
Torah and Mitzvah. That's the Gemara says in Shabbos, by the way, that the Chachamim at one point thought of hiding away Sefer Kehelas. Sefer Kehelas is the whole book is Shlomo HaMelech describing his researches into what is a person here on earth for. There's various individual psukim as you go through over there that seem to contradict things in Torah. For example, he talks about at one point over there how he thought the best thing in life is just to eat and drink and have a good time, etc. Whatever. There's various psukim. So the Chachamim thought in that case people are going to get confused. It's not a good thing. Except they looked into it. They realized the beginning and the end. The beginning and end of Sefer Kehelas tells us the importance of Torah and Mitzvot. The end of it is Sefer Avraham Kol Nishma. So that's the last part that we say before Ben. The beginning of it is right after this pasuk about the Havel Havelim. My Yisrael La'adam Cholamola Sheyamo Tachas Hashemesh. What good does a person accomplish with everything that he works under the sun? Which the Gemara explains in Shabbos. The implication is only things under the sun, meaning Gashmiyusik things, are worthless. But if a person works for things above the sun, for Ruchnius, and then, like I said, in Tanya, it brings from the Zohar, that also means even Torah and Mitzvahs have to be done with Shmon, otherwise they're also below the sun, whatever. So then it's worthwhile. So then once the Chachamim realized that, then they said, in that case, it's worth keeping in Tanakh. People will realize then that the whole Sefer is meant as an exploration of how to be a Yerusha Mayim.
But if you start teaching Kray Helis, you have to finish, right?
I don't know.
Isn't that a lacha?
No.
If you start a shir in Kray Helis?
I've never heard of such a thing. Could be.
You have? Oh, you haven't
heard
of it?
No.
It's really from
yes. Because of those beginning and end sukkim. Because of the beginning and the end sukkim. Anyway, the point is, So that's one explanation. The Ritva says a different explanation why the seven Ma'amodos and Meshavos. He says there's six seasons in the year, it says in Parashas Noach, after the Marble. We learned in Bava Metzia about it. Each season lasts 2 months. And then you have day and night, which counts as a seventh thing because it's a 24-hour period. So those are the seven periods that a person goes through in their lifetime, and therefore, so now the person is dead, so now he doesn't go through those changes of the seasons anymore. So therefore, we have seven Ma'amodos and Meshavos to correspond to that. Okay. Exactly how do you do this Maimon Moshe? Because it's only something that's done in certain places where they have the minhag to do it. Nowadays, in fact, the minhag is very rarely to do it. I don't know, Scheinzalt mentions in his Gemara that there are some Yemenite kahilos that still do it, but in general, otherwise it's unheard of. So what, how do you do it? Omalei, so Ravashi tells him, Kitatani, as we learn in a Braisa. Omer of Yehuda, be Yehuda, in Yehuda, in the southern part of Eretz Yisrael, but it's shown the law, how you perch the Meshiva Ma'amadis and Meshavas Lament. Originally, when they had the minhag of Maimon and Moshav over there, they would do no less than seven Ma'amadis and Meshavas for a mess. Kigoin, and what would they do? Like, what would they say? After each one, they'd say, Imdu Yikorim Ma'amadu, stand up, precious ones, dear ones, stand up. Hello? And by the next one, Shvu, hello, Shvu Yikorim Shevu, sit down, precious, dear ones, sit down. Omruloi, to the Chachamim say to Rabbi Yehuda, Im Kain, if that's all you're doing over there, if you're not actually if you're just standing and sitting, you're not actually doing, you're not backloading this, you're not crying, you're not doing a spadim, you're not whatever, after Shabbos, when the Shabbos came, then by rights, you should be able to do that on Shabbos as well. Now, what do you mean doing it on Shabbos? That's the question. Okay, so it's like this, what does Rambam say? Let's say, for example, imagine a person passes away and they do the Levaya on Friday. Let's say it's late in the day. For whatever reason, they weren't able to do the Levaya early in the morning. They're doing it close to Shabbos. Now, when it comes to being an Onan and being an Ovel, the night, you have the day first, then the night. So even though it's Friday night, it's already Shabbos, it's still a continuation of the same day. So therefore, if it was just a matter of you're coming back from the funeral, you're standing and sitting and whatever, you should be able to do that on Shabbos as well. But we know you don't. So therefore, in other words, the Chachamim are saying to Rabbi Yehuda, there must be more to a Maimon Moshe than that. You're right, it does involve the standing and the sitting. It does involve saying Imdu Yikorim and Shavu Yikorim. But it also has to involve, as we described before, as the Rashbam described, that it must also involve the crying and the espedim and the thinking and to have achayit and the libo, etc. And therefore, that's why you can't do it on Shabbos. So Rabbi Yehuda is saying that all they do is just as they're coming back, they go for a while, then they stop in a place, they sit down for a little bit, they sit there a few minutes, somebody says, Imdu Yikorim Amordu, and they get up and go to the next place and repeat the process seven times. The Rashbam says a reason written why they do seven is because there are shadim who follow them from the basic rotas. This way, when they stand and sit all those times, eventually the shadim go away. The Rashbam says, I don't like that explanation. First of all, then it should be a universal meaning. It shouldn't just be in some places. And second of all, we just said it's connected with the seven havolim of Kehelis. Anyway, whatever it is, so Rabbi Yehuda is saying that's all they do. The standing, the sitting, and the saying, Imdu Yikorim and Shavu Yikorim. The Chachamim are saying there has to be more to it than that, because we know you don't do Maimon Moshe on Shabbos, and if that's all it was, you could conceivably do it on Shabbos, which is to say on Friday night as well. The fact that not means the Chachamim are saying each time they're sitting down, it's also they're crying, or they're being Menachem Avol, and they're thinking into the transitoriness of life, etc., and therefore that's not something appropriate for Shabbos. So the Gemara tells the case, Achse de Romi Bar Papa, having a civil letter of Ivya. Romi Bar Papa's sister was married to Rav Ivya. Shchiva, eventually she passed away. of Lamaimah de Moshe, and her husband, Rav Ivya, made this whole ceremony of Maimah de Moshe on the way back from the funeral for her. Rav Yosef tell b'tarti. However, Rav Yosef says he made two mistakes in doing that. Number one, tar sheino yisnel b'kroivim v'uavad afal b'rochokim. Number one, the way it's supposed to be done, that the way it's supposed to be done, the Maimah de Moshe, is only the relatives who are not doing avelos, meaning like the second level relatives, like uncles or nieces or whatever, only they come to the Maimah de Moshe. He had even further away people. He had non-relatives coming over there. That's not how it's supposed to be done. And
the people that are sitting.
No, meaning in other words, like this, it's supposed to be. So then you have the people who are sitting Shiva, and then you have the other relatives who are not sitting Shiva, but nevertheless they're relatives. You have, for example, let's say in this case, so her husband, for example, is sitting Shiva. Her children are sitting Shiva. Her brother is sitting Shiva. But let's say, for example, now you have Rav Ivya might have children from another marriage. There might be, for example, Rav Ivya's. Let's say, for example, there might be Rami Bar Papa's children. For example, her nephews and nieces. They're the ones who are supposed to be there by Maimah de Moshe. They're the ones who do the standing and sitting and the being Menachem Avel and so forth. It's not meant to be for the whole Olam. And Rav Ivya is making a Maimah de Moshe and then asking the whole Olam to come. So that's one mistake. And to Vatar Shainosin, LBM Rishon, whoever BM Shani. Number two, he made another mistake. It's only the Maimah de Moshe was only done on the day of the Kavura, on the way back from Levaya. He did it on the second day. He did it the next day, which is not how it's supposed to be done.
Well, on the first day.
It's all supposed to be done on the first day, right after Levaya. Yeah.
It's part of the going back.
Yeah. So yeah. Okay. Abaya Omar, Abaya says, Bahar Nami Tah. There's another mistake that he made also. Sheinos in Elo Beis HaKvaros Vu Asa Be'ir. Another difference is it's supposed to only be done in or near the Beis HaKvaros. He did it back in the city. That's also not how it's supposed to be done. Rava Omar, Bahar Nami Tah. And Rava says he made yet a fourth mistake. Sheinos in Elo B'makam Shana, Guba Hasim Lainoho. The whole concept of Maimon Emotion was only in a place where the local Minhag is to do it. It, evidently, in Bavel, it wasn't the minhag, which is why we had before Rav Acha Breid Rav asking Rav Ashi how it's done, and he had support him Breita of how they used to do it in Yehuda. So Rav Ivya is living in Bavel. He had no business doing a Maimon of Moshev anyway, because not the local minhag.
He didn't know what to do.
Maybe.
So why was he asking in the first place?
No. These are two different people. Rav Acha Breid Rav is asking Rav Ashi how is it done, just to understand our Mishnah. Rav Ivya made a Maimon of Moshev for his wife, where it wasn't the minute to do it. And therefore, so we're saying that was a mistake for him to do. Okay, so the question is, Maisvi, okay, but I have a contradiction. You're telling me one of the things you're not supposed to be doing, you're telling me you're only supposed to be doing it on the day of the funeral, and you're only supposed to be doing it by the Beis HaKvaros. But we just said before, Amr Loi Yimkein after Shabbos Mutalas, okay? And we said that the Chachamim say to Rabbi Yehuda, if, like you're saying, there's no mourning or crying or whatever involved, why can't you do it on Shabbos? The question is, if you're saying that it's only done in the basic Kvaras and it's only done on the day of the Kvura, basic Kvaras for Shabbos, my boy, what are you doing in the basic Kvaras on Shabbos? So Rabbeinu Gershom explains the question is, how are they burying on Shabbos? But okay, the Rashbam answered that before by saying we should be talking about the burial was on Friday late in the day and it's going into Shabbos. But rather, the explanation
you're not
is...
You're not allowed to bury on Shabbos.
No, you're not allowed to bury on Shabbos, obviously not. But the Rashbam took care of that by saying that we're talking about that the burial itself took place late in the day on Friday, and the Maimon of Moshe was being done on Friday night. Fine, but that's what we're saying. The Chachamim are saying you can't do it because of the mourning. But if we're saying that it can only be done on the first day, and it can only be done in the Beis HaKvaros, the question is rather like this. Usually in those days, the Beis HaKvaros were quite a distance out of the city. Sometimes even more than the Tum Shabbos away from the city. So what are you doing in the Beis HaKvaros? What are you doing in the Beis HaKvaros by the time it comes Shabbos? If you were there, what, they're going to spend the whole Shabbos in the Beis HaKvaros? They would time things better. They'd time things better to make sure that they don't get stuck there over Shabbos. So the answer is Be'ir HaSmuch al Beis HaKvaros. Yes, but you can be talking about where the city is fairly close to the Beis HaKvaros. Yes, down to you, Ben Ashmoshes, and they buried in Ben Ashmoshes right before Shabbos. So therefore, conceivably, they could be making a Maimon of Moshev on their way back because it's still the first day. Because again, it's within the Tum, and it's still the first day because it's right after the burial. Again, and for this purpose, the night follows the day. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that all it involves is standing and sitting, and the Chachamim are saying, but we know you can't do a Maimon of Moshev on Shabbos ever. And if all you're saying is it involves standing and sitting, there wouldn't be a problem during an Shabbos, so obviously it must involve mourning as well. Okay. Mishnah says, so now talking more about Kvarim, and for this we're going to need some diagrams. We have some in the Rashbam, and I have more over here. So that's the conclusion of that then. So that's what the Maimon of Moshe is. So in practice, we don't do Maimon of Moshe nowadays. Okay. What? Maimon of Moshe, we were just saying, the standing up and sitting down on the way back from the funeral.
Okay, people go to the shul and they sit down in certain places to say Beishir.
That's something else. That's maybe an echo of the meaning of Maimon of Moshe, but it's not the same thing. Okay. Mishnah says, Hamochem Makom Lachaber Lachas like Kever. If somebody sells an area to somebody else where he's going to be making himself a kever. Now, we're not talking about before, we're talking about selling one individual kever in the Gemara. Here, we're talking about where there's going to be a whole complex of kvarim for a family. V'chenem akabel mechaver lasis lekever. Or similarly, a person contracts that he's going to build an area of kvarim for somebody else. Now, the way they did kvarim in those days is, again, they didn't do individual kvarim like they do nowadays. Instead, what they do is they'd have a cave hollowed out into the ground, and out from that cave, they would extend outward in various directions, as we'll see in the Mishnah and in the Gemara. There would be niches going into the wall.
Natural?
No, not natural niches. No, they'd carve them out. They'd dig them out. They'd carve them out.
In the rock? Or
in the rock, in the soil, whatever, yeah. So they found in archaeological excavations all over Israel, they found complexes like this. I don't think they found any arranged exactly like it says in our Mishnah, but they found similar concepts. That's a whole different thing. Yes, it is true that the minhag in those days was that they'd bury the people in these niches or whatever until the body decayed, until it's just reduced to bone, and then they'd gather up the bones from liquid atzamos, and then they'd rebury them in a box, in an ossuary, like you say. Yeah, they found those all over Eretz Yisrael also, yeah. It's called liquid atzamos. You find various references to it throughout Shas. Yom liquid atzamos is considered like a mini day of avelus for a person, for example, therefore you can't do a chalamoyed, let's say, yeah. Anyway, okay. So the deal was then, so you have these niches sticking out of, in all different, so you'd have a cave, you'd have niches sticking out from it on all sides. Each niche, when a person dies, they'd put them in an oren, and they'd slide the oren into the niche. Head first, foot first, whatever. So Toichel Shomaira Dalat Amasal Shesh. So you make the inside of the cave from which the niches will come out, you make it 4 by 6 amos. So here you have an illustration of it. You can also see on Kuf Aleph Amud Aleph, you can see the top illustration in the Rashbam illustrates this. So you make the cave 4 by 6 amos. And you open out 8 niches into the cave. 3 on one side, 3 on the other side, and 2 on the end. So we're not talking about none of these diagrams actually show exactly what the Rabbanon hold, because we're going to see that Rabbanon hold is only 1 or 2 caves. So rather look at the first illustration in the Rashbam on Kuf Aleph Amud Aleph. This one. And you'll see. So you have from the cave, there's 8 niches, 3 on one side, 3 on the other, and 2 on the far wall. The Rashbam explains the reason, let's first learn the size of the kuchin. The kuchin and the niches themselves that you put the mesim into are orkan 4 amos, the length of them is 4 amos, the ruman 7, the height is 7 tvachim, the rochban 6, and the width of them is 6 tvachim. So the way it works then, according to the Rashbam, is you have like this, each long wall, we're saying is 6 amas. So you have like this, a half amma from the beginning of the Maira, from the beginning of the cave. From the chotzer, which we're going to talk about the chotzer in a second, that's the area surrounded by the heavy border over there. So you have a half amma from the edge of the chotzer to along the wall of the Maira. Then you have a niche 1 amma wide, 6 tvachim, as we say in our Mishnah, a space of an amma, another niche an amma, another space an amma, another niche an amma, and a half amma at the end, till the corner. So that takes up the whole 6, that covers the whole 6 ammas. And on the far wall, similarly, you have a half amma on one side, a half amma on the other, the two niches along the, two niches, each an amma wide, and an amma space between them.
How come it's the square, 3 on each side?
The Myras are not square. They're 4 by 6 amas.
4 by 6.
The Chaser. The Chaser. Yeah. Two of them we're going to talk about in a minute. Right now we're talking about one. Right now we're talking about one Myra. We're talking about the other one. We'll talk about the other one soon. But yeah, the Rambam has a different explanation of it, by the way. The Rambam understands you don't have those half amma margins on each side. He says what you have is you have niche, 1.5 amas, niche, 1.5 amas, niche, along the long walls. So you go literally, so each niche is an amma wide, like we say in our Mishnah. But in other words, so you have the three niches take up three amas. The two spaces between them, 1.5 amas each, take up the other three amas. So that covers the whole length of the wall. No, three niches and two spaces of 1.5 each between them.
So that's three.
So it's 1, 1, 1, and 1.5, and 1.5 makes 6. Right. So there's no half amma till the corner, like the Rashbam is saying. And as far as the ones on the far wall, he says also they're straight from the corner, and he says there's two ammas between one and the other of them. Okay. So that's how you have it.
That's just on one plane, and nothing on top of one.
Yeah, we're not talking about anything being above or below. That we're going to deal with in the Gemara. Yeah. Okay, as far as the size of these kuchim, they're 4 amos long. So Rashbam says the reason is because the mess himself is 3 amos tall, and then the aron itself takes up the 4th amos. Especially because Mepharshim say also that you don't make the front side of the aron is not going to be flush with the wall. It's going to have to be in a little bit because you're going to have to fill it, or you're going to have to fill it with earth or rocks or whatever. Yeah, so there has to be a little bit of extra space. Tosfos has a long discussion about that not necessarily actually. 3 amos may only be up to a person's shoulders. And actually, we know there's the famous two dais about how long an amma is. Rav Chaim Noah, that makes it 1.5 feet. The Chazanish, that makes it 2 feet. The Chazanish's way of looking at it, it makes better sense to say that 3 amas is head to toe, like the Rashbam is saying. The Rav Chaim Noah's way, it makes better sense to say that it's from shoulders to feet, because otherwise your average person is not 4.5 feet tall. So anyway, so according to Tosfos then, given that 3 amas is only up to the person's shoulders, what it is Tosfos saying, that's why you need 4 amas up here. You bury a person with his head on his shoulders, after all. So the 4th amma is for his neck, his head, and for the aron. All that takes up the 4th amma. As far as the height of the, we're saying each niche has to be 7 tefachim tall. So the Rashbam says two reasons.
7
tefachim tall. Like that. Why is that? The Rashbam says the first of all, you need to be able to slide in the aron. If it's only the aron itself, by assumption, is 6 tefachim tall. If it's only 6 tefachim, if the height of the niche is only 6 tefachim, if the height of the niche is only 6 tefachim, you're not going to be able to fit it in. So first of all, you need room to be able to slide it in. Second of all, the Rashbam says another reason, which is midah raisa, as long as you have an empty space of a tefach above a mess, anybody who's learning Shlosha Parakim or Rambam today, then if you walk on the ground above the kever, you won't become tummy. Midrabanan, the Rabbanan made it that you'll be tummy anyway. They don't want you walking on graves. But at least midah raisa, it takes care of that problem. Not three tefachim, one tefach. So if you have the top edge of the aron is here, and you have one tefach of space above it, that's enough to prevent the tumah going through midah raisa. Tosfos talks about
that.
It's a halacha mishmita. Tosfos discusses Tosfos has a big discussion about it here. You need a little more than that. Also, you also need that one end of the kever. You also need that the end that faces towards the mitre is open a little bit. Otherwise, it's kever sotum. Otherwise, it's considered a sealed kever, and it's even more metame if there's a space over there. But
so what, if that's the case, it's just a need for one
tefach. So therefore, in other words, the aron itself is 6 tefachim tall.
Right.
You have one tefach extra space above the aron, right. And therefore, if you walk on the ground above the kever, at least on a deraisa level, you won't be tall.
So you remember when we studied, I think Yuma, we had the caves in the Beis Hamikdash that were very high.
That's exactly it.
To prevent
tumah from going through. Exactly.
More than one tefach.
Yeah, technically, all they need to be is one tefach. You can make them as large as you want.
But it wasn't kavarim.
Yeah, there's a problem. There's a problem with kever. Right. There might be an unknown kever under the ground. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So the minimum cave would have been a tefach also.
Yes.
But they didn't
be. They did bigger. Yeah. Okay. So that's the arrangement, therefore. Okay. Reb Shimon Omer. Reb Shimon says, no, you make each cave 6 by 8, so two amas longer in each direction than the Tanakhama made it. So it's not 4 by 6 like the Tanakhama said, but 6 by 8. And you make 13 niches coming out of each cave.
So
Yeah, Abomikan, four, instead of eight, four on each side, so here you can see the bottom diagram.
Yeah, a bigger family.
The bottom diagram in Rashbam illustrates this. Then we'll talk about that in the Gemara. Wait.
Yeah.
We'll get that in the Gemara. Relax. Okay, so according to him, you have ignore for now, just focus on one of the four caves that you see in Rashbam's diagram. Ignore the other ones for now. You have four niches on one side, four on the other. Again, the same idea. Each niche is one amma wide, and you have one amma space between them. So that takes up the whole 8 amma's length. And then you have three on the far wall. You can see the three that are sticking up on the top instead of two. The echad miyamina pesach, the echad minasmo, and one to the right of the doorway and one to the left. So in the diagram over here, you can see they're shown as coming out diagonally on the back wall. We'll see in the Gemara, it's not so simple. We'll see in the Gemara is going to offer a few possibilities before it reaches that conclusion. Okay, so that's how you have 13. 4, 4, 3, and 2. Then, next what you do is you make a chotzer by the entrance to the cave, sheish al sheish. The chotzer is 6 by 6 amos, which is enough room, kimloyam mita bekevreha. That's enough room for the mita, which is 4 amos, as we said before,
so
plus the people who have...
The previous one.
No. The Myra according to the cave according to the Chum was 4 by 6. We're talking about the Myra. Now we're dealing with the Chatzah. Before we were dealing with the Myra, the one that has the niches sticking out of it. Now we're talking about the Chatzah. What's shown over there, the middle square over there, the center square over there that's shown in a bold outline.
So it's
6 by 6. 6 by 6
amos.
No, the Myra was 4 by 6 according to the Chum. We didn't talk about the Chatzah yet. We never talked about the chotzer yet. We talked about the mayra. So far, we talked about one mayra. Now we're going to the chotzer. The chotzer is 6 by 6. And by the way, how is that chotzer? The mayra is obviously, by definition, a mayra is a cave. It's underground. What about the chotzer? One way that Tosfos explains over here, the chotzer is higher than the mayra. You have steps going down from the chotzer, steps or ramp or whatever, going from the chotzer into the mayra. However, Tosfos explains on the basis of the Gemara and Sota, which therefore we'll learn it closer to Shavuot, that actually the Chotzer itself is below ground level also. You need stairs or a ramp to get down to it from ground level also. So you have, here's the ground level, you have the Chotzer is over here, and then the Mayra is still lower down.
So
yeah, is even lower than the Chotzer.
No. Because?
Because the Chotzer itself is distinct from the Kauka Olam. It's not just an open area. Okay. So you make this chotzer, sheish al sheish, 6 by 6, from the mitzvah kevreha, big enough for to be able to fit the mitzvah, which is 4 amos long, plus the people who are burying it, one on each end, so that's why you need 6 amos. Or peseach peseach shtei myris, and then you open out into this chotzer 2 caves, achas mikan v'achas mikan, one from each side. Again, that's the top diagram in the Rashbam. So he says in that case, why is the Mishnah phrasing it in such an odd way, where first it talks about the Myra, then the Chotzer, and then it mentions 2 caves? He says because otherwise a Chotzer has no meaning unless it has something to open into. So first you have to describe the Myra as like the equivalent of a house. Once you have a house, it's meaningful to talk about the Chotzer. How you actually build it, sure, you build the Chotzer first and then you build the Myra, of course. But as far as when we're talking about the actual use of it, the Myra is the primary thing, the Chotzer is sort of the secondary. Okay, that's fine. But nevertheless, though, in terms of what's more important, the Myra is more important, and therefore it's mentioned first. And then once you mention the Myra, then you mention the Chotzer. But in other words, according to the Rashbam, everybody would agree, the Chachamim also agree, that you have 2 caves. The Rambam, it's interesting, only brings the concept of one, and he doesn't even of one cave, which leads some of the notes of Kalim on the Rambam to say maybe the Rambam disagrees with that. Maybe he says that only according to Reb Shimon would you have 2, or maybe even 4, or whatever. Maybe according to the Chachamim, the contractor has accomplished enough if he has one Myra and one Chotzer. Okay. Anyway, Reb Shimon and Arba La'Aba Ruchaser. Reb Shimon says you have 4 caves going in all 4 directions at the bottom diagram. Yeah. Reb Shimon Gamliel and I call a fiasella. Reb Shimon Gamliel says it all depends on what the rock or the ground is like.
Oh.
Which means, in other words, so the Rashbam says, first of all, it means like this. We're talking about the number of kohim. Like this, you have a number of niches. Like this, the Tanakhama is saying you have 8 from each Myra, and Reb Shimon is saying you have 13. So Reb Shimon Gamliel says it depends what kind of terrain we're talking about. If it's strong, if it's rock or whatever, you don't need a full armor between one cork and the next. So then you could conceivably have more than 13. On the other hand, if it's softer ground, maybe you can only have four or five kokim per cave, because otherwise they'll collapse into each other. There are other Rishonim, actually, who learn that's not a question of that. They say there's a minimum amount of space that a mess is toisus anyway. There's a toisus talks about it a little bit, but there's a minimum amount of space that a mess is required to have, and therefore, even if it's very solid ground, even if it's very hard ground, there's still a limit how close together you can put the kokim. Because there's a limit. Covered a mess is, and each mess has its own caper. Actually, you asked them about before putting one on top of the other. We'll see something about that in the Gemara. But there is actually the Shavus Yaakov, one of the early Achronim, talks about that. You have technical halachas in Shulchan Aruch. You're supposed to have a certain horizontal spacing between kvarim, a certain, if you can have one caver on top of another, you need a certain minimum vertical separation of dirt. He says nowadays we're not knowing that. He says because unfortunately the situation in Europe was the goyim barely give us enough room to live in or to bury our dead in Bechlal, let alone so we have to make do. So therefore they had to bend the rules a little bit because they had no choice. As far as I know, they don't do the thing with caves, no. But there are in America and in other places where there's plenty of room. Yeah, you have a certain minimum spacing between kvarim, 3 tefachim horizontally and 6 vertically, I think. And really, it's not supposed to be vertical. Really, ideally, you're not supposed to bury one mess on top of another unless you have no choice. Okay. Anyway. Okay. So Rav Shimon Gamliel saying a kol lefi asela. So the Rashbam says the first explanation is, as we just said, that it means depending on the type of terrain, you make more or fewer kochim, depending on the soil. If it's hard soil, you can make more kochim because then you don't need as much space between one and the next. If it's softer soil, then you have to make fewer kochim because otherwise they're going to collapse one into the other. And then he says another explanation is it can also mean the number of mayrus. That when we say over here the Tanakhama is saying you have two caves and Rav Shimon is saying you have four, it also depends on the kind of terrain. If it's hard terrain, then you can only if you have, for example, if it's soft terrain, you can even have two caves going in the same direction. Like this in our diagrams over here, we have each one going in a different direction. If it's soft enough terrain, you can conceivably have two of them coming out in one direction because it's easier to dig. And actually, the Rambam in Pirush HaMishnayos understands it that way as far as the niches also, just the opposite of the way that Rashbam says it. If it's softer ground, it's easier to dig. Go ahead and then the contractor is responsible to make more kochim. If it's hard ground, it's harder to do. Yeah, the Rambam understands it that way. So, I don't know. This is apparently all over Eretz Yisrael. I don't know. Okay. All right. So, the Gemara starts off like this. Okay, so we're saying according to Rav Shimon, you have four niches on each, four kvarim on each side of the Myra, on each of the long sides, three on the short side, and then you have two, we said, echad mimina pesach ve'echad mina smo, one on the right side of the door and one on the left side of the door. So the question, well, in the diagram we're showing them a diagonal, but you might have to establish that. So the question is, those two that we're saying is one on the right side of the door and one on the left side, where exactly are we putting them? Are we doing them outward, meaning in other words, that we would have, there's a mira, you would take one of these kvarim and put it going outward from the edge of the mira under the chaser. So let's say you'd have one here and one here, let's say, and one here and one here, whatever. So you'd have to put them on different levels. So to talk about points out, but exactly. Never mind that. Let's not even get into that. The Gemara has a better question. Mm-hmm. If you're going to say that they're going underneath the chaser like this and so forth, like that, for example, the problem with that is, first of all, how commit the sheep? First of all, they're getting trampled on. Mela, the ones on the other side, yes, you have to walk over them in order to get down into the chaser. Right. Fine, that's it. Like this, if you have, for example, like Rav Shimon, you have all these ones sticking out in all these different directions. To go to the chaser, inevitably you're going to have to walk on some of these kvarim. But fine, that's just a short thing. That's just a short-term thing. That's not such a big deal. But if you're going to have ones that go under the chaser like this and like this, it's because people are going to be trampling on them all the time. People are going to be standing there in the chaser for a considerable amount of time and then walking on them, and it's a bizarre for the mess. And the two, and furthermore, you have another problem. Hotznan, we learn in a Mishnah in all this. Chatzara kever ha'omid b'seichet tahar. This chatzar that's in the middle over there, the 6x6 chatzar, if you stand in it, you are tahar. You're not tamei mes. Implying there can't be any mason under the ground over there. If there were, you'd be tamei b'oil. No, that would prevent you from being tamei b'deraisa. But when the Mishnah says tahar, implies even d'rabbanan. But how does that work? Yeah. So there's a chatzah. Is there the chatzah? Now, how do you get into the chatzah remaining tahor? Aren't you walking over the other graves? So Tosfos brings from Rashi in from Rashi in Sota over there, and the Ramban says the same thing in our Sogia. That let's say, for example, the person was brought there inside a box. So that is enough to prevent him from being tame. Again, given that the kvarim themselves have a tefach of space within them, in the niche, which is enough to prevent tumah d'oraita on a d'oraita level. D'rabbanon, they'd be tame if they walk on the ground. If they're brought in there in a box, even d'rabbanon, they're not tame. So therefore, if the person is brought in a box and then dropped off in the chutz over there, they'll be tame. But the Mishnah is saying he's tahor. If you're going to have burials, if you're going to have kvarim under the floor over there of the chutz, then yeah, it's impossible to be tahor over there.
If it's in a box, what's the
rule? Once you're in the box, the tumah can still get to you inside the box. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, even midaraita actually. If you're on top of a cave, fine. Let's fine. If the tefach in the niche over there, fine. We'll prevent you from becoming tamei. But the box is not going to prevent you from becoming tamei d'rabbanan. Yeah. Okay. So that's the question. There's a different gear set that some of the Rishonim have, but the Gemara is asking two different possibilities. One is we're asking maybe we put the two kvarim over here, let's say, on the inside of the Baira, going inward from the door, and the problem is then they're going to be trampled on. And then the question is, so maybe we make them go outward, and then the problem is, fine, they're not going to get so trampled on, let's say, because you don't stay in the chutzah for a length of time, but nevertheless, you have a problem, you're going to be tamei, and the Mishnah says you're tamei. So according to that, it's two different, okay. Okay, so Rabbi Yosef of Chanina says, fine, here's what you do. You make those two kvarim like a bolt. A neger is a bolt, a vertical bolt. In other words, what you do is you make a vertical burial. You dig, so there's a couple of different variations that Rishonim talk about what it means exactly. That's what we're going to talk about. I'm going to ask that one second. Of course, let's understand what it's saying. So there's various explanations, including that it can mean you make them, let's say, over here and over here, right inside the mitre. So you make them like, let's say, right over here and over here as a vertical thing. There's a shaft going down into the ground. And fine, it's not such a problem that they'll be stepped on because nobody really stands in that area right behind the door. Tosfos talks about there might be an actual wall between the Myra and between the Chotzer and the Myra. We don't know, the Mishnah didn't clarify whether there's an actual wall between them. If there's a wall, maybe the burials can be done in the thickness of that wall, again, vertically. And there's a couple of different variations that we show. Now, right, so the problem is, didn't Rabbi Yechanan say that burying like that is like the way you bury a donkey? It's a disgraceful way of burial. A human being has to be buried laying down.
That is how a donkey should be buried.
Well, a donkey is just thrown into a pit or whatever. In other words, nobody pays attention to how particularly it's buried. The actual expression "kvoras chamur" comes from a pasuk in Yirmiyah. It describes over there about the king Yehoyakim, one of the last kings of Yehuda, was a rasha. And we'll learn about him in Sanhedrin. We'll learn about the things he did. But anyway, so Yirmiyah, and Nabi says in Nevuah about him, and if he doesn't do tshuva, kvoras chamur yikavu. He's gonna be buried like a donkey.
Who was he a descendant of?
He was a descendant of David, like all the kings of Yehuda. Let's say he was a Russia. Well, we'll learn about him in Sanhedrin.
Did he get the burial of a donkey?
So he did, actually. We'll learn. There's a whole story over there. There's a whole story over there about hundreds of years later. His skull was still rolling around the streets of Yerushalayim. Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't even know that he would have.
I don't know. Maybe he did. Yeah, if we had time. Okay. It would be nice if we had time. All right, onward.
To do what?
To do Nachyam. Onward. No, let's continue with our Gemara. Okay. Okay, so the answer is little Yechanan to Avod Lohu B'Keren Zavit. Fine, according to Rabbi Yechanan, who says that it's unacceptable to bury a person standing up. And by the way, it's not necessarily everybody agrees with that. There is, for example, there's a Gemara in Chagiga, for example, that mentions that Rav Huna ended up getting buried standing up. And there's also brought someplace, I don't remember what the marker for it is, that Rav Meir was buried standing up. So apparently there are days that such a thing is acceptable, but Rav Yechanan never. Just because something is minhag goyim doesn't in and of itself make it possible. Otherwise we couldn't wear shirts and pants either. You know, but
actually, the Gemara says you can't wear pants.
The Gemara says women can't wear pants because
no.
All right.
We'll get to it. Okay, so about 3 years from now.
Where? Oh, oh, you're talking about the Gemara in Nidre over there? Yeah. No, okay. All right, whatever. Okay. No, yeah, okay. I have an idea what he's talking about, but I'm not familiar with that Gemara. When we're talking about the Masech Zula, the Shalom, the Masech Achriti, so let's wait till we get to it. All right, so the answer is according to Rabbi Yechon, and what you do is you make those niches in the corners. So now, either it means in the corners, again, like the diagram we had before, sticking out diagonally from the corner, from the far corners, yes, or the Rashbam says another explanation. The Rashbam says another explanation, which he says, though, I don't like, which is that you put them in that, we said before that you have a margin of a half amma between the first, between the edge of the mitre and the first, and then on the first kuch, the first niche. So in that half amma, you can put another kuch over there. He says, I don't like that, because for one thing, how can you call that ked and zavis? It's all along the same wall. So we're going to talk about in the Gemara now that some of them are done on different levels. Even so, though, you can't really call it the Keren Zavis if it's not done, if it's just coming out of one wall rather than two. And so therefore, he prefers the explanation that we're talking about. It comes out of the corners, like in the diagram. Okay. Mm-hmm. So now we have a quest. Fine. So now we take care of that. The problem is, but if you're going to do like that, so if you're going to have them sticking out of the corners over there, don't you have the kuchim touching each other? At the corner over there, you have a bunch of them coming together at the corner over there, right? Yeah? So Ravashi says, what you have to do is you put some of them at a lower level than others. So in other words, you have the last kuch on one side over here, the last kuch on one side over here, and the corner one is a little bit below them in the wall. So the point is the Rashbam said you can't really do that throughout the whole cave because then you'll undermine the cave. But at least to do it like that in one place where it starts out like that together, it's close to them, and then it's going further and further apart as they spread apart. That won't undermine things. You'll be able to do that. Okay. And in fact, the Gemara says, after all, you have to say that it means that you're doing some of them deeper than others, because if you don't say it like that. What about, for example, Reb Shimon? Go back to the diagram on Amud Aleph. Reb Shimon's the diagram of Reb Shimon. You have the bottom diagram, the second one. You have over there the four ones in each corner close to the chaser. According to him, you have two from one side and two from the other side that cross. That's what you're asking before. So you have to say, so how do you answer that? El of a mamik. Obviously, you must be talking about that some of them are deeper than others. So therefore, in the corners, you can say the same thing that it's talking about, that they're deeper than others. There's no big deal in doing that as long as you do them six tefachim apart, first of all, and secondly, you do them six tefachim apart, it's supposed to be the minimum, and you do it in a way that the walls won't collapse. However, Rav Huna Bredya Yeshua says, I don't like that answer. I don't like that idea that you make them on different levels. You shouldn't really be burying mason underneath each other. Rather, Rav Shimon would say that what do you do as far as those four that we said would be touching each other? Instead, what you do is you do them all diagonally. You can see the bottom diagram in Rashbam over here. So, over here. So you see, for example, all the ones that stick out from the long walls of each mitre all go at a 45-degree angle. So therefore, you have room enough for all eight of them without them crossing each other. So therefore, by the same logic then, the ones in the corner is also. Well, the problem is, however, the problem with that is that what Rav Huna Bredya Yeshua is saying is barusa. We've talked about barusa before, literally means outside, meaning something that doesn't belong in the Beis Medrash, or maybe barusa, something that's incorrect, whatever it is. Why? Mechti, because let's consider. When you have a square, every amma along the short sides of the square corresponds to 1.4 ammas along the diagonal. In other words, the diagonal is 1.4 times approximately the length of the square. It's actually a little longer than that, but whatever. That's
square
not
root of 2.
Square root of 2, yeah. So therefore, if you have over here, so you have the long side of each mitre, according to the Shimon, is 8 ammas. So you have a square 8 by 8 ammas. What's the diagonal of a square 8 by 8? Kamahabalahu, how much does it come out? Chad Surey Bechumsha, it comes out to 11.2. 8 times 1.4 is 11.2. Kuchen Kamahabu, Tmanya. You have 8 kuchen that have to fit into that space. And you have to have space between one kuchen and the next, like we said in the Mishnah. So, how are you going to fit 8 kochim with a space of an amma between each one of them? Is a total of 15 ammas of space. How could that possibly fit in 11.2 ammas of space? It doesn't work. So you have to necessarily say that what Rabbeinu Breider of Yeshua is saying won't work. One of the things, some of the Makoshim actually say an interesting thing, Barusa can mean it was said on something external. There is a Braisa in the Tesefta and on a Sefta that talks about a different possibility where you have different caves that are all in the same direction. There you can have, in other words, not one sticking out in each direction like we're talking about over here. Then it's reasonable to talk about ones that go out at 45-degree angles from the walls of it. But relative to our Mishnah, it doesn't work for the reason that we just said, because it doesn't work mathematically. The Iboy Sema, so, or yet another possibility we could answer, that you don't have to say, so far we have two possible answers, what we're doing with those ones that are in the corners. One is we put them on a lower level than the other ones. Rav Huna Breid Yev Yeshua didn't like that idea of putting them on a lower level, and therefore he says you make them all at a 45-degree angle, but we slugged that up. So now, the Iboy Sema, Kidomer of Shisha Breid Yev Idi Benifli, just like Rav Shisha Breid Yev Idi says, which is in the next piece of Gemara, which we'll learn tomorrow about Hashem, that there could be a case when we're talking about Benifli, we're talking about burial caves, or not caves, burial niches, individual burial plots, that are used for nephilim, for stillborn, or babies, who die very young, Rachman al-Islam. So those are much smaller than ones for full-size adults. Hachanami benifli, the same thing over here. We can be talking about ones for nephilim. Which means, in other words, first of all, it means the two that we're talking about in the corners then don't have to be overlapping with the other ones. They can be smaller ones for nephilim. And therefore, they can fit within that space without overlapping with the ones that are at angles. The ones on the far walls, yeah. There were the ones on the far walls, here and here. Can be smaller ones, therefore you don't need as much space between them as the one next to them. Second of all, also, the ones that are pointed up Shimon were saying would be overlapping the two from each wall that would be overlapping with the two from the next wall, these over here, these, and these, also could all be from the fallen. Or some of them at least could be from the fallen. And that way you don't have any problem of them crossing because they're very short and very small, yeah. So therefore you can work it out that way, and therefore you vital don't have anything crossing each other. So therefore, so in other words, as much as possible, the Gemara would like to make it that we're not going to put Kvarim at different levels. Because ideally, you're really not supposed to do that. But the Evid, if you have no room, then you put 6 spots in the dirt between them, and then there's only a mess, basically. Each mess has to have his own space. If you have no choice, then you have no choice. The Gemara would rather avoid it. Okay.